Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Trey Crowder, one of the funniest guys you're going to see on YouTube. Make sure you check out his stuff over at the Liberal Redneck. Always spot on. Good stuff. But here's the thing. We got lots of work to do, lots of rebuilding to do. I just wish they wouldn't do it in front of me every day this week. You get out on the roads, they're the little orange cones have reappeared. And if we do what Joe Biden wants, a massive infrastructure plan, rebuilding the country, expect many more cones. And here to share some thoughts on just how many orange cones we may see, I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org is their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, and just remember, you know, just like braces are temporary on teeth, those traffic cones are temporary on the highway, but you'll end up with a beautiful road after it's all done.
No, we desperately need it, but in the moment, I got to get somewhere. I will be appreciative that I don't have to get the car realigned every couple of months. But in the moment, going to be a little stress.
Yeah. No, of course. And it brings up one of these issues, which is that some Republicans have latched onto, which is like, their definition of infrastructure is very 1950s, right? It's just bridges and roads. And when Democrats or anybody else talks about water systems or levees or broadband or school or social infrastructure, they step back and say, well, that's not infrastructure. And yeah, it's true. It wasn't infrastructure in the 1950s or people didn't consider it, but we're in the 21st century and it's an integral part of our life. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's underestimated. And so that's one of the sillier debates that I've seen come up against it, is that only a portion of this is going to go to bridges and highways and the rest is going to go to this other stuff. Well, this other stuff is vitally important, yep, to our future. And it's, you know, and so I think that for me, I like broad definitions of infrastructure because I think it means more Americans will benefit from these investments.
No, I mean, yeah, I look at the South Dakota governor who came out and said, you know, there's tons of stuff in here that's not, you know, like pipes and houses. And I'm going, wait a second. Pipes and houses, that's part of infrastructure. Did I miss that day in infrastructure school? It's all of the physical things that we have. And, oh, by the way, the broadband, we need that too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's the visionaries, and you have to think about this, I think this is really important. The visionaries in America are the ones who have reimagined our economy or our systems that connect people. I think of like the Transcontinental Railroad and Abraham Lincoln or Alexander Hamilton wanting to build out a series of canals to make us more competitive, or Eisenhower and the interstate highway system. And so this is the next logical step in all of that, because it will make us much more competitive, much more efficient, and it will save lives, and it will help deliver water and services to people who can't rely on those right now.
Right.
And if there is a definition of what government does, this is one of those things to guarantee that, like, we have the framework to be successful in this country.
What's interesting to me, and not to harp on the broadband thing, but what's interesting is a lot of these Republicans are from rural states that don't have the kind of infrastructure that we need to compete globally. And I maybe I'm getting a little older, but I seem to remember the internet being framed as the information superhighway. So, you know, if I'm not going too far, you know, we've got the interstate highway system and the information superhighway system. We should probably want the best of both.
Right. I think you're right. And I think when it comes down to it, absolutely, it's in rural states' interest to increase broadband investment or the electrical grid. I mean, these are states that rely on those types of services, not to mention everything else. And what I believe is happening, both with this and then, well, how do we pay for it, or it's going to be expensive, or we're raising taxes on big corporations, is that I think Republicans are trying to throw darts at this and to see what sticks with the American people. because so far this program is wildly popular among voters, among Democrats, yep. among independents, and among Republicans. And so obviously they're trying to erode that a little bit. But I think at the end of the day, it's hard to vote against things that are going to benefit your own state and your own constituents tremendously and are going to create a lot of jobs.
See, now you say it's going to create a lot of jobs, yet yesterday I talked about the Republicans who had come out and said it's going to cost us jobs because this is the infrastructure plan is a slush fund, if I remember the terminology that they used, that's full of liberal ideology and it's going to kill jobs. So there seem to be, you know, alternative realities at play here.
Yeah. Yeah, there really are. And the way to break this down is a very elementary way, Rick, and it's to think about everything that goes into our infrastructure. So our roads are built out of concrete and rebar, you know, and our bridges are built out of steel, many different types of steel. Our broadband has a lot of electrical components. Obviously, our energy grid has grain-oriented electrical steel and a lot of those the long and you know, fiber optic cables. As well for broadband and, you know, iron water pipes, et cetera. And those have to come from somewhere. And guess where? They come from factories. And guess what? Those factories employ people who make good wages, who then spend the money in the community that support other jobs. So, you know, by not investing, we are definitely costing ourselves job opportunities. And it is crystal clear that not only do you get those jobs from the installation, like the construction jobs and all of that that goes into it, the installation jobs, the maintenance jobs, you get those manufacturing jobs as well. And I have to believe that if you're in the working class, whether you're white, black, brown, Asian, or whatever, that this is going to be a very good deal for you, and no matter if you're in a red or a blue state. So this is a win-win. And the slush fund argument is kind of silly because it is if you look at our needs in this country for infrastructure, they're in the trillions of dollars alone. And this is a major investment. But quite honestly, even if you look at what the American Society for Civil Engineers recommend, that the Biden's plan as it's constructed right now will get close to meeting that, but it won't even meet what the American Society of Civil Engineers say that we need over the next 10 years to really make rapid advancements. This will be much more about digging ourselves out of a hole and laying the foundation for a solid future.
So you're arguing that this should be a much bigger plan? This should be chunkier?
I think it should be. Yeah, I absolutely think that it could be ambitious, that they could expand it out a number of years, that they could increase the size of this, because I think that the demand for these types of projects is going to be unlimited for a while. And yeah, we will catch up. And, you know, as you know, things like the interstate highway system do get built out. But we're sitting on an infrastructure that in many cases is 50 or 100 years old. And it was meant for a population that was half of what we have now. So we have some work to do.
Tell me about it.
We have to go back.
I've driven in the cities. We got a lot of work to do. But here's the thing. This is one of these moments where I've been saying we're heading down the road towards the next Cold War. And I don't know that it's so much going to be about bombs and tanks and aircraft carriers as it's about broadband access. It's about, being able to get products to and from, to markets. It's about having a manufacturing base. This is one of those moments, and I think the pandemic really highlighted the fact that we don't make a lot of things here anymore,
right,
and that our supply chains are very weak. So for me, this is an opportunity to kind of help bolster our ability to compete with China, because they're not allowing us to be in control anymore. They are competing to be number one.
Yeah, yeah, it is a I guess the Xi Jinping is a leader who many people either misunderstood or underestimated, and he has turned out to be very nationalist, very inward thinking, and wants larger ambitions for China, and that means challenging the United States. And like you, my fervent hope is that this doesn't end up in a shooting war or even anything approaching that, But what it certainly does mean is that there's going to be intensified competition, and we will collaborate when we can, but we will be adversarial in many circumstances. And so what does that mean? So for instance, when we're looking at building out a battery infrastructure in the United States, whether it's for electric vehicles or electrical storage or whatever, you know, we want to have the capacity to do that. Right now, 70% of the lithium ion battery capacity is in China. If we want to build out a solar energy future, we want to be able to do that. But right now, 60% of the world's polysilicon comes from not only China, but from Xinjiang, where there is a cultural genocide underway against the Uyghur population who are forced to work in these factories. And so these are all really bad circumstances. And if we want to untangle ourselves from some of that mess, because I'm not counting on China to change. I think if China demonstrated the capacity to change in that way with respect to human rights or labor rights, this would have happened a happen. So what does that mean for us? It means we have a strategic choice. Do we go along with this, these crimes against humanity, or do we build our own future as well? And this is the perfect opportunity to do that and to make sure that we are competitive. And as Joe Biden said to a bunch of the executives just on Monday, you know, we used to make 37-39% of the semiconductors in the world. We make 12% right now. Let's get that back up. Let's reclaim our global market share so that we aren't dependent on another country when we're running short.
No,
because it's not a good circumstance for us to be in.
No, and I think, again, I go back to the pandemic and the fact that we didn't have enough PPE to protect our frontline workers, let alone the public as a whole. And I know now there's a push to, okay, we got to increase our supply for PPE. But that supply chain problem goes across industries and across markets. And it's something that is much bigger than just gloves and masks and gowns. It goes all the way down the list. And you guys basically wrote the book on why our military needs to reclaim some of our supply chain.
Right. You're absolutely right. From the military to PPE to semiconductors to even like ketchup packets, we've had serious supply chain challenges. And the problem, Rick, is that, you know, first of all, we need policy support. And I do believe that Biden is headed in that direction. I really do believe that. I mean, there may be some bumps on the road, but I believe he's headed in that direction. But I think one of the larger issues is the folks who benefit from these cheap imports, and by them I mean our big retailers or the middlemen who then sell PPE to hospitals, they depend on those impossibly low prices from China, where it is less than the raw materials would cost in the United States to produce a finished good in many of these cases in China, just because there are no really enforced environmental or labor standards, and there's massive state government support for all of these enterprises. And it means it's really hard to gain a foothold in the U.S. market. So how do we do that? We can do that through tax policy, we can do that through trade policy, we can do that through procurement policy, and we can do that through investing in our market here. And so, you know, Biden is starting to pull some of those levers, and I think that's a good thing. We have a long way to go. But it's going to take a while to unwind those who are invested in this, the companies like Walmart or Amazon or these middlemen in that service the healthcare sector called group purchasing organizations, and others, and even quite honestly, like clean energy developers. You know, they have an interest in these cheap polysilicon materials from China, and they're going to resist building up an American supply chain because it's going to slightly raise their prices.
Yeah.
But look, we're a great country. We have a lot of really smart people and entrepreneurs. And if we set our mind to it on how can we make this in America, I'm 100% sure that we can get that done.
I'm right there with you. But here's the thing. I think the Walmart slogan of lower prices, better life just popped into my head. And I'm going, yeah, but it comes with crummy wages. So those lower prices don't really matter because you're still not making the money that you'd be making to be able to afford them. Oh, and by the way, the stuff that we're getting is just a bunch of cheap plastic crap that in a couple of years is going to be out of date or obsolete because they plan it that way. So you got to buy it 10 times over your life to make up the difference. So for me, lower prices, better life, that equation doesn't work.
No. Walmart's a great case study here because originally when it was founded, big American flags, you know, they draped themselves all over Americana. As it turned out, they led the offshoring charge. The carnage they cost in manufacturing amounted to hundreds of thousands of American jobs, and they kept wages low. And now they've discovered two things. They have a hard time getting American suppliers because they drove them all out of business. And so they have a PR program about purchasing American goods that does a little good, but it's not nearly enough to undo the damage they did. And they realize they have to pay slightly better wages as well so that fewer of their workers are on public assistance programs. And they're way behind the curve on this, but it is going to take them – you know, it is going to take policy. It's going to take a system of incentives to change this, because after all, it were those incentives that Walmart took advantage of in the first place, both our domestic laws and then our trade policy that allowed them to create this system that exploits so many people. And so it will take policy to unwind that and so that we can have a more equitable future and that we can rebuild manufacturing in this country.
Real quick, about 30 seconds. Are you surprised that Biden hasn't taken the tariffs off? I know there were the Section 232 steel tariffs that are in place. I know we're calling on him to hold those in place. Are you surprised he hasn't taken them off?
Well, look, if you looked at the Joe Biden who was a senator or who was a vice president, I would be surprised that he hadn't taken off. But I really do think that he has transformed his views on economic and trade policy. And so even his commerce secretary has said repeatedly now, the tariffs are working, and we agree. And until there is a global solution to this massive steel overcapacity, they have to stay in place, Rick. They absolutely do.
I agree. And look, I was in favor of the tariffs all along. It's one of the things that I thought Trump did right, even though there wasn't a strategy to go with them. It's not the only club you have in the bag.
That's right.
But at least I gave him credit for that. But Scott, I appreciate the time. Good stuff as always. Thanks so much.
You bet, Rick. Keep up the great work. Thanks for having me on.
Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Make sure you check out their work, AmericanManufacturing.org. Good stuff. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.